CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, Monday morning, and we are live, and we're here to look after you and keep you company, take you through your day. This Monday, Monday's always a little bit of a bumpy one because people don't exactly love coming down from the weekend and having to go straight to work and do impressive and useful and productive things. So if you're feeling like that this morning, we don't blame you. We understand. We get it. So that was fun with Dr. Hanan. I'm keen to get real people on here with real problems and have him solve them. I mean, it's just to see actual therapy in action and to have a result is a terrific thing. Makes me very happy. Like, Simpiwe's got a choice to make now, and you know, you've decided this is where you're going, and now you two can figure out one of those things that otherwise would be an issue. And frankly, I know that you and Simpiwe are not big problem people, but the reality is there are so many people who can't actually deal with any of this at work, and eventually it's like an acid. It starts to corrode their working life. They start to become obsessed with it. The problem becomes much, much bigger because it hasn't been dealt with. And the two people involved, or sometimes it's more than two people involved, eventually they can't work there anymore. Like, it becomes that toxic for them. So if we can help solve these problems, I tell you now, you're not going to get an appointment with Dr. Hanan in his private practice. He's busy 24/7. He does not have time. So the fact that we've got him here on a, you know, Monday morning for a good like 20 minutes is just, that's pure gold. Make use of it. Contact at cliffcentral.com. It's a really good idea. All right. So we've been asking for emails from people about living in other countries and what it's like living there, because we've interviewed a few interesting people, South Africans who moved to other places, people who've moved to South Africa from other places. And I got this from Stefano. He says, I left South Africa in 2001. I never really felt homesick. There was too much to see and experience in the world. Recently, though, I felt a need to reconnect with the country of my birth. South Africa's changed loads since I left, both in my view positively and negatively. In fact, I think it's changed so much over these 20 years I've been away, it's not even the same place I grew up in. Nevertheless, I've realized it's still a big part of who I am, and Cliff Central's a great way to rekindle the connection to my country. I discovered Cliff Central by chance a year ago. Now I listen to the show most days. Although I don't always agree with you guys, I find myself looking forward to listening. The MKT show is also top draw. That's nice. Compliment for you there, Bolero. And mainly because of the banter and the chirps in between, rather than the actual sports content. That's with respect to your show, Bolero. After about 10 years in London, and everyone, Stefano says, should experience living there if possible, I moved to Italy, where my family is originally from. Milan is a great place because it's small, but feels like a big international place. Italy offers all the obvious attractions that everyone knows. Great weather, awesome food, magical countryside, historical medieval cities, fashion, art, etc. But what I find particularly incredible is the amount of diversity in such a small country. The regions are all so different, with different cultures, dialects, and customs, from the Alps in the north to the beaches and the islands in the south. Not everything is positive, of course. Italians are usually pretty mainstream, especially with food, clothes, and entertainment. So anything out of the ordinary is often frowned upon. That can make living here one-dimensional and boring sometimes. I mean, just to break from Stefano's email for a second, honestly, living in like northern Italy, I think would be paradise. Like, if I didn't live in South Africa, that would be in my top three places that I'd want to live in. So it's, I love listening to this email. This is really interesting stuff. Makes me think. He says, besides that, it's a good lifestyle. And I believe the average standard of living here is higher than in other European countries. You guys mentioned on the show that the safety and security issues in South Africa should not be reason to leave. I don't think it was the reason I initially left. I was young and I wanted to see the world. But now I can't help but think that my daughter is safer here than in South Africa. And that helps me sleep better at night. So, just a really good piece of interesting feedback from someone who's living in Italy near Milan. I mean, that's amazing. Thank you, Stefano. I like the email. Thank you for sending it to us. Isn't that cool?
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think his name eludes me, but the guy who we spoke to who moved from Durban to New Zealand,
yes,
his story is stuck in my head. And it's I like these stories because it's pure honesty.
Yep.
And if the decision is a regret, you know, these people are admitting it, which is, that for me is the hugest sign of bravery.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, you can make the decision, but then you've got to make the best of what your decision is. So if your decision is, I'm going to move somewhere, then make the best of it, right? If you're going to stay in South Africa, or if you're going to stay in whatever country you're in right now, because this is all geography, really. If your mental attitude to whatever is bad, then there's no place on earth that's going to make you happy. If your attitude is good, you'll make it work wherever you are. You'd be in Uzbekistan and you'll make it work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people who want to live in Afghanistan, you know?
It's true.
Just think about that. Mm-hmm. By the way, Bulelo, I just want to throw this in here because we've got a lot of comments on people weighing in on the Simpiwe Mbulelo being late, being early argument. So first of all, here's Sanele, who says, I agree with Mbulelo. If someone is late factually, if work starts at 6, you're not late if you get to work before 5:59 and 59 seconds. That's the fact. Anyone who sees anything else is seeing their own personal view. So I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure whether Sanele is on your side or on Simpiwe's side on that one.
Me neither. It's not very clear.
Michael says people who arrive just before create added unnecessary stress for others. It's quite selfish. I don't know about that. Like, I was on Simpiwe's side for most of that discussion, for what it's worth. Really. I mean, also, I've been doing these morning shows for what, God, it feels like forever, 12 to 15 years now. And it's horrible. Like, this, I don't want to sit around. I want to be ready to go at 6. And of course, I've sometimes been late. That's going to happen. But to sit there and get ready for half an hour. Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. To me, it's making the compromise to shave off extra sleep is on a daily basis. Yeah. It's almost like paying an insurance. It eventually adds up to something, but to what cost? You've actually shaved off every single day, working day, some time of your sleep or your routine.
Well, you know, Bulelo's argument will be then just go to sleep earlier.
100%. Yeah. but again, Leanne and Simpiwe would have probably said the same thing, is that kind of mentality is what scares me. Is always, what about my sleep? Sleep earlier. What are you talking about? You should be disciplined enough to sleep.
What do you think of this, Mbulelo? Kevin says, I've worked with so many people who are pedantic about following the process, like you are. The majority of them had low quality output with regard to KPIs. I had to micromanage them to increase output quality. You're not interested in outcomes. Uh-huh. You're interested in process. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of more an outcomes guy, hey?
I mean, life is all about probabilities, right? Nothing is perfect. Nobody is perfect. But if you're outcomes based, you've got to be bloody talented. You better be bloody talented. Processes ensure that you're going to get higher quality outcome more often than not. Not always. Not always. Life is a probability game. Good processes more often than not give you higher quality output. Not always. Not always, but...
Well, let me tell you, when it comes to high quality, collector mania is my favorite thing. And you know we're going to be doing that later this morning. And this morning we're going to speak to somebody called Gwendolyn, who has a collection of My Little Ponies.
Ooh.
This is going to be interesting. All right, so hang around for that one. I think that's going to be fantastic. Can't wait.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is cool.
The only reason the MKT show is good is because Mbulelo arrives an hour before the show starts. Well, actually, he's there 3 hours before the show starts. But yes, that's part of it. And then, you know, there are a lot of people who to some people, like, time management is not a big deal, because as long as they get it done, they don't really. I mean, I know, and maybe Mbulelo, you've made a good point about, like, really talented people and really brilliant people who can break the rules sometimes. And they are rare, but when they deliver in bucket loads, right? And to them,
100%.
Like, if you put processes around me, I like things that I'm not responsible for to run on processes. I like that a lot. I can see the wheels turning with me not having to be in place, right? But to impose that stuff on me, has the opposite effect of making me productive. Like, if you impose too many processes on me and I feel like I'm being hemmed in by them, I just become an automaton and I deliver the absolute minimum. That was kind of how I felt about my TV show that I just did with ENCA that we finished in July. I felt like I was being plugged into a bunch of processes and there was no room for it to be creative or interesting for me or for the audience. And I could not wait for it to end. My favorite part of the week was after that show was in the can and I didn't have to think about it for a few days. Know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's different strokes, mm-hmm. dude. It's just incredible. What I loved about the conversation with you and Simpiwe this morning is that Dr. Hanan saw a way to get to a resolution. He saw a way that, like, here's how we're going to fix this. Because you weren't going to move. You weren't going to budge. And I kind of respect that. So the choice is then Simpiwe's. It's great. This is why he's so good at what he does, you know? Anyway. We've got lots of other things to talk about. Don't forget Collectomania later on. It's going to be amazing. And we're going to play out an interview this week, which I've been kind of, I've been a little bit, cryptic about who it is. But I can now tell you, the First Lady of South Africa is a woman called Dr. Tsepo Motsepe. Okay, comes from a really interesting family. Her younger brother is Patrice Motsepe. Her one sister is Bridget Radebe, who married Jeff Radebe. Her husband is Cyril Ramaphosa, right? She's an incredibly dignified and charming woman who does not like the limelight. In fact, I don't know if you've ever seen an interview with her. I may have just done the first one ever. And the reason I have a relationship with Dr. Motsepe is because my business partner, Rina, and she have been on the advisory board of a really incredible organization. They used to be called the Asher Trust. They're now called Early Childhood Development or something, ECD. I can't even remember what the right acronym is. But these guys do
ECD.
They do incredible, incredible work with young kids in townships, young kids who haven't got babysitters, who are often left in the streets of wherever they live to fend for themselves, and they don't get the basic learning skills that you need to put into people's heads while they're still very young. And Dr. Motsepe has been heading this foundation. She's been the chairperson and the patron for the longest time, and they do such good work. And I got involved. I went to Bram Fisherville for the opening of one of these, I don't know, it must have been 12, maybe even 13 years ago. And that was the first time I met her. And I've always been hugely impressed by the people that she works with there who do the actual heavy lifting. So they train women to become teachers, basically teachers and carers for these young kids. They provide them with a meal so that they don't go hungry through the day. And let me tell you, this woman does unbelievable things. And for the first time, she sat down and talked to us about the work that she does. And for the first time, as far as I can tell, she's given an interview. So I was very, very privileged to have that opportunity to talk to her. And you can get to hear it.
Amazing.
Yeah, we'll be launching that this week. So I'm excited to let you in on that one. Cool.
Looking forward to it.
All right. So now on to Leanne's little agenda for this morning. She's got a couple of things. Apparently, this is the most bizarre story in the world. Investigations are underway because they found an overloaded truck on the N2 with 106 human corpses on it. Yes.
What? Yeah, it's you heard pretty that mad. Right.
Listen to this story. This is unbelievable.
So there was a routine stop along the N2 near Somerset West.
Mm-hmm.
And so traffic authorities pulled across this vehicle, this truck, and they found that it was overloaded, which, you know, prompted them to investigate a little further.
Right.
When they opened the back of the truck, they found at least 106 corpses
in
the back of this truck.
Oh, wow.
From the image I can see, it looks as if they're in either cardboard, sort of pine coffins or cardboard boxes. Must be pine.
Wow. Okay.
So basically, it's understood that this truck was en route to the Eastern Cape. The provincial health department has since said we need to know if these deaths were COVID-19 related. Could it be that, perhaps? The necessary paperwork was in place.
Mm-hmm.
However, the truck was overloaded, and an additional vehicle was then called in to take over some of the bodies because the paperwork was in place, and the driver was then allowed to continue with his trip. So there's no criminal investigation underway.
I need to understand this. So there's usually a dead body, like it's dealt with within a couple of days, right? There's a funeral and then it's gone. Like what do we need to be transporting 106 people cross country for? What's that all about? Was there an explanation?
No.
Yeah.
Basically, the investigation continues.
God, that's incredible.
So we don't know. I mean, that's just crazy. Can you imagine being the traffic cop who's just like doing a routine stop and he opens up and finds, oi.
Carl says, you wouldn't catch me dead on that truck. By the way, the foundation I was thinking of is called the Early Care Foundation. The Early Care Foundation. And actually, I'll give you the website details because they are looking for people to help. Because these kids need meals and we need to keep these creches open for them. And we'll tell you more about that in the interview. But it's called the Early Care Foundation. So just to go back and correct something there. All right, so a bunch of bodies on a truck. And somebody says here, Corona's Boring says, is it because of our obesity rates? Is that why the truck was overloaded?
Yeah, because usually you can have 106 bodies, but these bodies were overweight.
Was it refrigerated is a good question from Bev.
That's what I wanted to know.
Because if it's just a hot truck, you know, like a normal, I don't know if anyone wants to be near that truck.
Well, I mean, being an avid crime series watcher, the body can disintegrate all the way through a ceiling into the next floor below.
Oh, my God.
If you're in like a multi-level household or apartment block.
Yeah.
The body can disintegrate completely. Everything except the bones can fall through building material.
Oh, my God.
In a liquid form into the next. So that the truck would have to have been, because not even a pine box will stop that. Had to have been refrigerated, surely.
It's always amazing, like, you know the morgues, this is a very depressing, very dark conversation, but you know the morgues, there are unclaimed bodies there every year. There are people who just, they die, they get picked up on the street. Nobody knows who they are, who they belong to. No one ever claims them. And the morgues just have to get rid of these unclaimed bodies. I suppose they put them in a mass grave or, you know, municipal cemetery somewhere. That's pretty wild that, like, you could die and no one would know who you were or bother to claim your body, right?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I think in this case, they must have known who the bodies were because they were transporting them to a specific place.
Yeah.
And it was an undertaker who was moving the bodies. Yeah. So it must have been people who perhaps died in one place and needed to be transported to another. And I mean, in that case, it tells me that you're going to have to wait a little while, a few days or more, to collect enough bodies to make that trip.
Sure.
Alternatively, they could have been taking the bodies to a necrophiliac auction, you know?
Oh,
well, you've got to be open. You've got to be open to it.
What's wrong with you? That's horrendous. Dr. Robin says the explanation is that the what they could have had is a crematorium that couldn't cope with the numbers. Oy, oy, oy.
Mm.
Yeah.
But why don't we just donate these bodies to science? I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah, but
like I know universities are struggling to get bodies to slice up. Well, why aren't we doing that?
Well, you know, I heard the most interesting thing in a documentary I watched this weekend about Alexandria in ancient Egypt. There's a doctor called Galen, G-A-L-E-N, I think. And he was the first person to figure out that the brain was where it's the main control and command mechanism. I mean, this sounds obvious now, but we're talking about, you know, the year kind of 100 BC or something, where people actually thought that I mean, the ancient Greek philosophers used to think that the brain was just a ventilation system for the heart. So things really developed because this Galen was able to do, you know, in the early years of Christianity anyway, you couldn't really do anything to a body because there were religious connotations to that. But the ancient Egyptians had always mummified people, and therefore they were quite used to dealing with the body as an object and not as some kind of revered vessel for the soul. And he had to go to Alexandria, this doctor, and experiment on the brain and on the nervous system to figure out a whole lot of this stuff, because Egypt was the only place that allowed him to do that. And when you talk about donating bodies to science, there's still a lot of people who are absolutely dead against that. And there's some people who are like, yeah, take me and my organs and let some medical students learn. That's the way to do things. I wonder
that's
how,
what I've done.
Have you done it? So you're actually like an organ donor, and you are available for medical. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Plus at the body show, what's the name? Old, I forget what his name, Gunz or whatever. I forget what that guy's name is. I don't know. Did you ever go to the body show when you came here?
No, I really wanted to.
With the German bloke?
Get it. No.
Oh, where has done those slivers, microscopic slivers of an entire corpse.
And he's also got
put them onto
full
slides.
He's also just got like full bodies. Just you can come and touch it over here.
Amazing.
Incredible thing. I went and signed up with him as well. If you want my body.
Oh, really? So he can.
Oh, yeah.
So you actually want the artist in case here to take your body and put you on full display.
And have me as a bit of a muse. Yes, if that's where you're headed, absolutely, yes.
Ah, that's incredible. All right. How can you tell if someone's from a certain country? You can tell from their accent. You could tell from the way they dress. You can tell from maybe the whole different language. You could tell because they might have an identifying pin of their flag or something on their jacket. There are a number of ways you can tell where someone's from, right? But usually you just have to ask them. Now, apparently, finger counting, as in counting with your fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that is a giveaway of your nationality.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I mean, if I had to ask you now to show me what 3 is on your fingers, what would you do?
I'd say probably like that, 3.
So, Gareth, you've got your 3 middle fingers up.
Yeah.
And you're facing them to someone. Mbulelo?
Right. Open palm, 3 fingers. Mbulelo will.
Yeah, I'm with Mbulelo.
So you and Mbulelo. You open your
pinky ring finger, right. Middle finger,
and you use the other side of your hand. The top of your hand rather than the palm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, where do you start counting if you're going to count to 5 on your fingers?
Thumb.
Pinky for Mbulelo.
Pinky for
thumb,
me.
Thumb for me.
Okay.
So looking at what people do around the world, if you're in the UK or many parts of Europe, mm-hmm. you probably start counting with your thumb and you finish with the pinky.
Right.
While in the US, they start counting with the index finger.
What?
Ending with the thumb. So they start with 1 being your index finger.
Right.
2, like a peace sign. 3, like an alien sign. 4 is with your pinky up, everything except your thumb. And 5, they end up with your...
So they save the thumb till last.
Thumb
and it's not even in sequence.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense. Start with a thumb.
But
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. As 5 as your pinky. Done. Surely that's...
In parts of the Middle East, like Iran,
mm-hmm.
they begin with the pinky.
Okay.
And in Japan, they actually start with their fingers extended in an open palm. So all 5 fingers are out. And they draw them in 1 by 1 to make it.
That makes the most sense. That one makes the most sense. That's why Japan wins. That one actually is the way to do it.
How does it make more sense? You're left with 0 at the end of everything.
No, because even if you're stupid, right? If you're waiting for me to, I can't see it's 2 or 3. I'm starting with 5.
Uh-huh.
Very clear to you,
yeah.
Right? 4.
No,
3.
I think that's bullshit.
Like any dum-dum, that one works.
I think
that's I'm going to start doing that.
I think that's bullshit because you're always left with 0. It doesn't help you to count. What's wrong with you? You don't get to count.
Yes, but I'm saying, how many pricks have you seen going 1, 2, three. Oh, flip, I'm out of fingers. What was it, 6 or 7?
Oh, like, stupid.
No,
it's good. You keep going. You use another hand. You're like 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, so on. But also, you're not using your hands to do big calculations. You're using them usually to do small ones.
But also, there are two different things here. The one is counting, and the other is showing someone a certain number as if they can't hear you, right?
Okay. But I still don't get the the Japanese system doesn't make any sense to me. And Bulelo thinks he's stumbled upon some kind of genius here.
What's interesting now is India. Uh-huh. They actually use the lines between the segments of the fingers to count.
Oh, you're kidding. Now that's interesting.
So this means that each digit can represent 4 numbers and the whole hand can represent 20.
Hmm. Well,
I tried to figure this out and I'm battling with it.
Because
I use the lines between the segments of the fingers to count.
So
this means each digit can be like 4, 8, 12, 16,
no,
20.
No, I don't see 4. I see 3. So on, I don't know how your fingers work, you lizard woman. But here, I've got so you got the very top of your finger, and then your first bend is 1, right? The second bend is 2. And the third bend where it joins the hand is 3. So 3, 6, 9, 12, 15 is what I've got. I don't understand how you get to 20. That's amazing, though.
And we can't argue with India. Their academic standards, particularly for maths and science, are so much better than Africa. Maybe can't dictate to them. So
speaking of Africa, in parts of Eastern Africa like Tanzania, there people use both hands in a symmetric way as much as possible. So, for instance, the number 6, for example, is shown with those middle 3 fingers.
Right.
As you're showing 3 and the other hand.
So three.
So they try and bring symmetry to it.
3 and 3 on each hand. Okay. Okay.
That's right. Then there's the indigenous northern people of Mexico who count on their knuckles.
Oh, wow.
And then there is the now extinct Yuki language in California, which actually use the spaces between the fingers. So that would be 4 on one hand. And 4 on the other.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting how we have 10 digits, and that's probably how we started counting in tens and how numbering came about.
Yeah, that's why 10 is such
Imagine we had 12 fingers, you know.
Yeah, then we 12 would be the system that we would use. Because often people will just round something down to the nearest 5 or 10 just because we've got 5 fingers in each hand. But, of course, there are questions then. Inga says, what happens if you lose a finger? Well,
Well, Inga finger.
Yeah, then you can't count. Sorry. Ridiculous. All right, listen, it's time for Collectomania. I'm very excited to have Gwendolyn on the show this morning. So we've talked to some people who have some pretty wild and wacky collections, right? And Collectomania is your chance to share your own collection with us. We want you to email us if you've got a collection, like Gwendolyn did. And you can send it to contact@cliffcentral.com. That's C-O-N-T-A-C-T. And that's what Gwendolyn did. She emailed us. She said, I collect G1, which is Generation 1, My Little Pony toys from the 1980s. I have over 150, and secretly a few of them are my favorites. I only started collecting again recently and went from 0 to 150 in just under a year. It is fascinating, and the ponies are so cute. I have my many complete sets, and some sets are close to completion. I'm obsessed with them and join auctions 2 to 3 times a week. I love the ponies so much, and they are so nostalgic for me. There's absolutely nothing negative about My Little Pony. They're just pure innocence and joy. So that's fascinating, and we're going to talk to Gwendolyn in a second. But I had to remind myself of what My Little Ponies were. And then
such a fresh memory for me.
Really? Tell us about your memory of them.
So I was definitely prime target of when My Little Pony started.
Yeah.
And in fact, we didn't even, it started with a collection for us with the actual figurines. And again, it was like a thing with Barbies. You know, the richer your friend was, the more My Little Ponies they had. Or the wealth was measured the other way around.
Right.
And if they had the latest one, they had the most money. But just remembering the different types, the different colors. I remember I had a cherry blossom one. And the cherry blossom one, their asses actually smell like cherry blossom. I had an apple one, and his hind legs also smelled like apple. And they come with their own brushes and bows and glitter bits and twisters, twisting machines to twist their hair and plait their manes. Oh,
unbelievable.
So nostalgic. So
the only thing, so I Googled My Little Pony, and I remembered that my sister had a couple of them, and she was also obsessed with them when she was little. So I'm really excited to speak to Gwendolyn. Let's go straight to her right now and see what she can tell us about the My Little Pony collection. Hey, Gwendolyn, how are you?
Hey, good.
Nice to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
This is a very strange thing to collect. You've got to admit, I don't think that there are too many people who either have a collection like this or are willing to admit that they have a collection like this. How long have you been doing this? You said you got them all, 150 of them in 1 year.
Yeah, so October last year I started again, but to be fair, I did start collecting them as a child, so it does, you know, stem back from my childhood. That's definitely where the obsession came from. And then I'm Zimbabwean, so I think you can put two and two together. No longer had my collection.
Right.
By the time I left Zimbabwe. And then I guess with lockdown, it just sort of popped into my head, you know, oh my gosh, remember My Little Pony? And yeah, the obsession just came so quickly and really unexpectedly. I started off with just a few and now I have hundreds in a very short time.
That's amazing. But do you think that this comes from your childhood in some sense, that you didn't get all the ponies you wanted as a kid, and now that you're an adult and you can get them, you're like, I'm going to get them all?
I don't think it's about acquisition or trying to acquire something. I mean, I do joke that it's, you know, I'm trying to buy back my childhood.
Yeah.
But I think maybe don't tell my parents I said that. But yeah, you know, it's definitely not like a maximizing objective. You know, I need to get this many and I need to get this one, but it's just super addictive as well. The actual process of finding them and collecting them, because there are these Facebook live auctions. Which are super fun. And then you're like, oh, I don't have that one. And it's going for super cheap. And then you bid on it. And then, you know, the next thing someone's bidding against you, and it becomes kind of pride that you have to continue bidding to get the pony.
So there's so many things I got to ask you here, but let's just start off. You don't have any of your original ones that you had as a little girl. So you've had to start from scratch.
Sorry.
No, so you've had to start from scratch. So how do you even begin? I mean, was this just let me just do this for fun. Yeah, you know, I've got some money lying around. Let me just buy one or two My Little Ponies at an auction. How does it go from that to, ooh, I've now got 150 of them in the cupboard?
I mean, I guess that's the crux of your show, right? Yeah. How does it go from that to 150?
Sure.
I don't know that necessarily I can answer that. But for me, yes, it started off as let me replace the ones that I remember having as a child. So definitely I'm more nostalgic. So like, this is Yum Yum. She's my favorite. And I had her as a child and she was definitely my favorite childhood pony. So it was, you know, it sort of started of let me just get the ones that I had as a kid. But originally when I didn't think I was obviously going to just find those ones. So, and I didn't know there was a whole community. So I just put an ad, one on I Love Melville, one on I Love Parkhurst. And I said, look, I'm looking at that time. I didn't even know they were called G1s. I'm looking for the original 1980s toys. And just a couple of random people, you know, one from Parkhurst, one from Melville, replied and said, oh, I've got some of those lying around. You know, you're welcome to come and get them. And then through that, there is a little community in South Africa of collectors. We have a WhatsApp group. We actually have a Facebook page as well. And they invited me to the Facebook page. And then through the South African Facebook page, I found the global Facebook page, which is where all the auctions and the fun really happens.
All right. So, this is amazing. Okay. First of all, 150 of these things. You said Yum Yum over there is one of your favorites, but who else have you got that you want to show us?
So I've got Bluebell, who is also a childhood pony. So her I bought from eBay. So when I get serious, then I go onto eBay and often they will have buy now options instead of having to bid.
Right.
Because sniping is a real thing on eBay. You know, you think people would be like super sweet, My Little Pony people, but you know, actually there can be some real dodgy eBay snipers out there.
Who unbelievable, just
will come in at the last second.
These evil My Little Pony people.
My Little Pony assholes. Like just these My Little Pony dicks who are trying to steal other people's money. Unreal.
Stab you in the back, you know.
Yeah, the snipers don't have a good reputation.
All right, so
Applejack's a favorite, so you might, Leanne, maybe remember Applejack. Yeah,
that's the one I had.
Yeah.
What was this? Leanne? What's this all about? These hands going like that? What is that all about?
It's a pony jumper.
A pony. So also Applejack was on the TV show, so I think you know, a lot of kids remember Applejack from the TV show as well.
All right, so take us through. Here's Applejack. A picture. Put this up now. So who are these?
So the orange one is Seabreeze, and the yellow one is Dancing Butterflies. So these are special because these are the first two ponies that I bought from overseas at, you know, at least this time. I don't know necessarily that I had any from overseas when I was a kid. But in this, you know, this frenzy of collecting, Seabreeze and Dancing Butterflies. So they're both Pegasus ponies. So you get different, shapes of pony. So the Pegasus are the wings. Exactly. Yeah. And then you get the unicorns, and then you get the earth ponies, which are just don't have wings or unicorns.
Earth ponies.
And then you
earth ponies. They're no special features. They're just ordinary little, right?
Well, all ponies are special, right?
Okay. What's going on in this picture? Who are all of these?
Oh, the hats.
Yeah.
So these are the big brother ponies. There were some of them again in the show. The hats are really cool to collect. So the pink one, unfortunately, I have bought the hat, but what I do is I don't send them all in one go because it just becomes a bit much. So I build boxes. So I do have Slugger, the pink one. I do have his hat, but it's sitting in a box in Canada. I paid more for the hat than I paid for the pony, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So I have all the big brothers, with their hats. So I do have Slugger's hat technically, and then I'm just waiting on Chief's hat. And then I have all of the big brother ponies with their hats. And I think there's maybe only one other person in South Africa who can claim that.
That's impressive stuff. You know, you've got this piece that you have to get. So what's going on in this? This is the big collection, right? That's the whole lot.
And your cat's playing in the background, which is so gorgeous. Someone asked me how many cats.
Cats and My Little Pony is actually a thing. So there's even again another Facebook page of Cats and My Little Pony. So people, I guess people who collect My Little Pony has also an affinity.
I think I found my people, Gareth.
And we've been looking for the right weird crowd for you. This sounds like your kind of crowd. This is good. Jeez. All right. Well, I mean, this must be expensive.
Yeah. That cabinet.
You go on the cabinet.
I was saying that cabinet, that's now all the ponies have been relocated because they were looking to me a bit like, they were in Filipino jail or something. So I decided to bring them all out, and I swapped the books. The books are now double layered and squashed into the cabinet, and the ponies are on the huge bookshelf. So yeah, they're really expanding. I actually spoke to someone on Friday about custom building me shelves because I'm just running out of space to put them.
Fantastic. What does all of this
and
cost
do
you?
The ones.
Sorry, Leanne. What is an average one? Because, I mean, they couldn't have been expensive back in the 1990s or whatever when they were made.
The 80s, yeah.
80s.
So in the 80s, no, they weren't exactly. So they were, you know, just sort of whatever a toy would cost at that time. But they can range anywhere from $5 to there's currently a South African Skydancer prototype on eBay for £1,500.
What?
Yeah, that's for one pony. So there really is a huge price range. So in terms of my collection, the most I paid for a pony is about 3,500 rand.
Sure.
But I have also had some great deals as well. So I do value them differently to what I pay for them based on, you know, my knowledge from the auctions and eBay prices, etc. So you do get some good deals, but some I do definitely splurge on.
Leanne, you wanted to ask something.
Oh, yes. Do the ones with scents still carry their scent?
So some of them do. So I have a Cocoa Berry who is one of the Sunday Best ponies. So I don't know if you remember their cutie mark. This is called the cutie mark. So it comes off their body a little bit. So they had like little ice cream sundaes, different little desserts. And those ponies came with scent. So my Cocoa Berry smells incredible. And if you smell her, it's just, you know, smell is the strongest nostalgia sense, and it just takes you back. As I said, you know, just trying to recapture something of my childhood, I guess. And it's amazing to smell her. So yes, I do have one or two that have retained their scent. But most of them, I mean, it's, you know, it's now 35, 40 years since, you know, that the ponies have been around. So understandably, a lot of them have lost their smell.
So here's a question. Sorry, go ahead.
I just have one question. Are there communities where, like, you know, in the States and Britain and whatever, I've seen where communities gather, swap, trade, there's an event every 3 months. Is there, like, I mean, for me, now that you guys are talking about it, I do kind of remember My Little Pony. Is there a community in South Africa where you meet up every 4 months? Hey, I got this, you got this, let's swap it out, or not really yet?
So, I mean, for me, not necessarily, because I've only been collecting since October and there's been a pandemic. So I guess we haven't really been getting together. But I have met a couple of the South African collectors. There's one who lives really close to me, and we actually connected because we get our ponies delivered to the same postnet, and we recognized each other's names on the signing list. So we became...
Don't get too close. She might steal your parcels and try to palm them off as her own.
Yeah.
Listen.
No, as I said, apart from the snipers, pony people are good people.
I want you to ID this pony for us quickly.
Oh, no. Okay.
So Tracy says, I remember my first My Little Pony was Parasol. She was purple with pink hair and had those little umbrellas on her bum. Do you know Parasol?
I do know Parasol. Parasol's lovely. So she's also in the shy pose, the same pose as Applejack. She's an earth pony. So she looks like Applejack, except she's pink and she has little umbrellas as her cutie mark. She's lovely. And she's a rainbow pony, so she has rainbow-colored hair as well, instead of just the plain yellow. So, yeah, she's a lovely pony. I love Parasol.
Well,
and I have a really nice one.
Well, you know what? I'm not surprised. Tracy says, Flip, this takes me back. Gummy bears, Cabbage Patch Kids, and Thundercats, etc. Yeah, all of that stuff from around about that time. That's amazing. And Rebellious Ruth says, I love this. Thanks for sharing. It's so nostalgic.
It's awesome. And people really do love it, you know. So every time I do have someone come to my house, the first thing I do is take them to the collection, and everyone has to pick a pony. And that pony kind of has to be their buddy the whole time that they are at my house. You pick one that you feel the most affinity to, and then the pony kind of follows you around.
I kind of like that. I really, really like that, because one of my favorite sayings is there is no free lunch. And at your house, there literally isn't. You've got to have a buddy who you've got to look after. I love that.
Exactly.
Gwendolyn, do some people think you're a bit of a lunatic, a nutcase? Are some people frightened by this when they see that you've got this interesting new collection and, you know, it's something that you're quite interested in and obsessed with maybe a little bit? Does it frighten people off?
Maybe. I know, I did go on a few dates this year, which kind of, you know, there were no second dates.
See, this is what I'm worried about.
I have since found somebody who thinks it's awesome. So okay. That's all that really matters to me. You know, I'm one of those people. If it's not your cup of tea, fantastic. You do you, you know?
Yeah. I like that. But I would be particularly concerned if there was a man who was collecting My Little Ponies. Have you met any men who are part of this community?
There is. So one of the biggest collectors in South Africa is in Cape Town, and he's a guy. So we honorarily call them bronies. I don't know if you've come across this term. So they are bronies. There's a whole documentary on bronies, but they are fans of the G4s. So the Friendship is Magic, you know, Twilight Sparkle, Rainbow Dash, which are not the original G1s. And then going back to Mbulelo's question, there is like a whole PonyCon conventions that happen in the States and the UK, and the bronies actually have their own convention, and they're grown men that, you know, whatever sexuality, you know, think there might be a stereotypical sexuality attached to that, but it's really not. And they will dress as My Little Ponies, go and listen to people speaking and collect and swap toys. And it's amazing. It's really for anybody. And it really is, as I said, you know, about childhood and joy. And it doesn't matter who you are or, you know, what your gender or anything. It doesn't matter. It's just for everyone who loves bronies. Something.
Are there bad ponies? This is a serious question here from Captain Blackknees. He says, are there bad ponies in Ponyland, like antagonists or the black pony, you know, dangerous, nasty ones?
In the G4, in the Friendship is Magic, I haven't really watched that, but I do know there is a bad pony. And yeah, she's all shadowy. And but in the G1s, which we remember, Leanne, as, you know, in the TV show in Ponyland, there were no bad ponies. So all the baddies were humans, actually. So Hidia and her two daughters that lived in the mountain, and sent the schmooze, which was just some kind of, group that went across the land. And then the flatter ponies had to come and, flatter their wings to get rid of the schmooze. So no, in the G1 world, there are no bad ponies.
Okay.
In G4 world, there is. Yeah. So that, you know, and we tend to be quite loyalist. Like the G1s are quite strictly the G1s, and the G4s are quite strictly the G4s.
Well, you've blown our minds. I mean, I actually don't even know where to go from here, but thank you. And thank you for sharing your collection with us. I think it's amazing that there are people who are collecting even toys from the 1980s like yours. And I'm sure that your collection is a source of great pride to you. I hope you end up collecting all the ones you want and you know, put them on a display. Have a special cabinet made. What the hell? Not? Why not?
Exactly. Oh. Thank you very much. Right. I'm so happy to share them. I absolutely adore them.
Thank you. We just love that you love these things so much. It makes me so happy to see people are passionate about something. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Isn't that cool? Well, there's another wacky collection that, I mean, I'm just.
Love it.
Yeah. You know, do your thing. Do your thing. Bronies. I can't believe there are bronies.
There's so much space for all of us. That's gobsmacked. I'm gobsmacked. But I love that. There's so much room for all of us to do our thing. That's so cool.
I'm so surprised by you, Mbulelo, when it comes to these collections, because I pin you for a minimalist who only has things that serve a purpose.
You're right.
It takes me by surprise. It's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
No, you know. Yeah, I mean, a big thing for me, my old duck, she always says, let people be. And I'm terrible at that. And I love to, I want to grow as well. I'm happy that people have their thing, man. People must have their thing. I have my thing.
And you know what? The more kind of eccentric and strange you are, the more curious you are, the more eccentric you are, I think the more you find a person that is tailored to your needs later on, because that person has to accept all of those things from the get-go, right? And they're probably willing to compromise in other ways too. And you probably will as well, because you realize, like, I've got this collection that kind of dominates a lot of my time and uses up a lot of my energy and my resources. And if you don't like that, then you don't like me. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's great. So Robin says, my cousin collects pigs. She's been married 4 times.
She sounds like my hero.
Pigs.
That house chair I'm looking for, you're welcome.
Do you have any of your old toys from when you were a kid?
I've kept, I've got a tiny jewelry box and I've kept a couple of things in there, but no. I, the other thing I do have, and I'm looking at them right now, are my storyteller books and storyteller tapes, cassettes, which I obviously don't play, but I know every inflection and intonation in the entire 20-volume series of about 40 stories each. So I don't really need the tapes. It's all stuck in my head. But that's probably my favorite collection.
That's so interesting to me again, Leanne, is because I've never been into like Disney or cartoons ever, right? Like ever, even when I was young. So it is interesting to me when people have these kind of throwbacks and they you know, sort of rekindle their childhood. It's like, that's so cool because that's the best time. So between 6 and what? I'd say is the best time in life, right? Reckless abandon. Zero consequences, no, and we're just full thin.
Anytime's the best time, as long as you're having fun. Bulelo, would you rather, there's a question from Tracy. Sure. Tracy says, would you rather go for lunch at Gwen and buddy up with a pony, or go for a Boots Braai at his Lapa rock pool?
Oh, shit, that is a good question. That's a good one. Oh, bloody hell. A Lapa. So there's obviously an above ground jacuzzi there.
Yeah.
But no, probably Gwen's house. No, because Gwen cares about something. Yeah, probably Gwen's. Yeah, the Lapa Oak doesn't care about themselves.
Gwen's a dime a dozen.
Yeah, no, I'm with Gwen. Yeah, I'm at Gwen's house. Imaginary pony or whatever the ponies are called.
You'd have to choose what fragrant parasol garden or whatever, and then she would sit on the table with you. Well, and you and Gwen would talk to your ponies while you talk to each other. Imagine that.
Well, Gwen has standards. So the oak with the above ground jacuzzi and Lapa has absolutely no standards. No, thank you.
Somebody says, get a Sangoma on next. They collect bones. Yeah. Let's see what we can do there. So also Tracy says she's got her Kermit soft toy. I used to buy my sister, because obviously she was once little. I used to buy her soft toys everywhere I went. I'd buy her a little soft toy, and eventually the collection got so big that she just said to me, "Look, first of all, I'm too old now to be getting soft toys, so I stopped." But she also said, "I've got nowhere to put them anymore," and so we put them all in black rubbish bags and sent them off to an orphanage or something. I hope that they got used and not just set on fire. You never know. Orphans are so destructive.
I'm sure they would have been used.
No, you know what orphans are like. They always break things.
Oh, my God, Gareth.
My ex-husband, Michelle says, collects Kinder Egg toys. He had over 1,000. Yo. That's a little bit obsessive,
those are cool.
Too.
You have to build some of them, right?
I think so, yeah. You know those, sure. Those Kinder Eggs? The ones that have got a chocolate and the little toys in them as well. Michael says, pony up, Mbulelo. And Bev says, you're never too old for plushies, for soft toys. Well, I don't know. Eventually you get to a point where there's nowhere to put them. And plus, you know, if they've been on a shelf or something for more than 5 or 6 years, they start getting a bit tacky, you know? How do you clean those things? I don't know how you clean them. Can we have Jacob Zuma on next? He collects wives. No, that's true. He does, actually. It'd be an interesting character. Well, the first wife, Makumalo, I got her at an auction. And can you imagine? Here's my second wife and third and fourth. Anyway, I wonder how he's doing.
This is the OG.
The OG, yeah. My 64-year-old dad still loves Lego. Oh, yeah. But Lego is Lego.
I don't think there's an age limit to Lego.
I love Lego. Oh, God. I don't have any Lego in my house at all. But my little nephews, whenever I go over there, I see them playing with Lego. And I'm like, damn, I love that. That's something I need to
do. Well, we've seen your brother's collection.
Yeah, correct. That's huge. So lots of other comments coming up about Gwendolyn and her collection. I just think it's cool. You know, also, like, there's something a little bit geeky and silly about any collection, right? But if you're collecting My Little Ponies and you're proud of it, then I'm like, power to you. Because you don't really care what people think. You're like, I'm going to collect the things I want. Brilliant. Pony apparently is a game collectors play after a cosplay convention. Mm-hmm. I'll bet.
Okay. Bad Pony.
Francois says, I still have my first edition Lion-O from the Thundercats with glowing eyes, and it still works. Oh. Maybe I should see what he would go for now and pay off my house. You'd be surprised. Hey, you'd be surprised. Like, some of these things are so rare that there's so much in demand that if you put it on eBay, you'd get huge prices for it. It would go, you know, sometimes if it's in good condition, through the roof, you could pretty much finance a car. On the Lego box, the age limits always stop at 99, i.e. they go from 6 to 99. That's so cool. Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. I've never even noticed that, but that, I think that's true.
Yeah, because after 99, you might start swallowing, thinking that they're like pieces of cookie.
Or one of your pills. Okay.
Yeah.
I know I have to take this handful of pills every day, so I'm going to have my Lego and crunch. Start crunching the Lego. Anyway, all right.
So no Lego for Philip.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's all we got time for this morning, but we will see you tomorrow bright and early at 6 o'clock. Have an excellent day, and catch us on the flip side tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers. Cheers, everybody. CliffCentral.com